Blog Talk Radio.
My name's Lisa Harrison. This is the Opt-In Show on the Freedom Reigns channel at Blog Talk. Wow, it's been a big week at Opt-In for the People's Trust. The courtesy notice did go out, and that will be the focus of our conversation today. There are a lot of questions. There's a bit of confusion, and we hope to clear all of that up today. The Opt-In website currently has the initial version of the courtesy notice and its guidelines, by the end of this show, if not by now, because I just didn't check in the seconds before we went live, an updated version will go on. And that's just a couple of typos and spelling mistakes, essentially. And there'll also be a two-hour audio discussion between the primary authors, being Scott and Ken Bartle, and Chris Hales, talking about the courtesy notice. So if you listen to that, and we want you to share that as well, for people who don't join in today, that will give you a very well-grounded understanding of what it is, why it is, how it works, the situations in which to use it, and all of that. Now, we will be going over quite a lot of that today as well. But there is a permanent record there. Well, there will be. So, excuse me. Without any further ado, we'll bring out some of the co-hosts we have here, which are Bob Wright. You with us, Bob?
Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Glad to be here, Lisa.
Yeah, glad to have you. And we have Chris Hales.
Hi, everybody. Also, welcome to the show. Also, great to be here. Got lots to talk about today.
And, of course, we have Brian Kelly.
Hello. Gosh, I would be remiss if I didn't say welcome to the show, and I'm very glad to be here. Thanks, Lisa.
No worries. I'm just trying to find, we've also got Scott and Ken Bartle. Now, I'm just trying to find out if they've actually called in via Blog Talk.
Scott,
whether they want
me
to bring them, what's his, Mr. Scotty, perhaps?
Mm-hmm, that's it.
That's him? That would make sense. Okay, Scott, you're unmuted.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. And is Ken
with
you?
How is everyone? He is. He's wrangling with Blog Talk.
Is he? Well, hi, Ken. Okay, let's kick this off because I know we only have the two of you for a little while here today. So can you just give us the brief background on what the courtesy notice is in terms of how it evolved out of your process that you already had?
Sure. Well, what was happening was, and I suppose the methodology I was using was to write to individuals, let's just say back then it was in the context of people working at these corporations, so departments, banks, whatever, at the lowest possible level I could find. So we were writing to them and asking for validation of, say for an example of a bank, validation of the debt, or with regard to so-called government, whether they had lawful authority. And the reason I was doing that was going right in at the bottom, such that the theory was they may not be able to answer that question, so they're going to ask their manager, and they're going to rattle. It's going to be reverberated around the coffee machine or the water cooler in the morning, and it's slowly going to escalate its way up through to someone who can answer that question. So along the way, there's going to be various people who are actually being exposed to those questions of, hang on, is there real debt or are we real government? And I thought, okay, that's an educational kind of tool for those who I'm dealing with. And that was where I think a lot of the old processes of going into your local council, your government, and telling them and saying, you're this, you're just a corporation, you're just that, was just meeting with the roller shutter. The roller shutter had come down across their eyes and they start thinking about beer and football. So I thought, well, we'll go in that bottom way. We'll let it escalate up. We'll educate as many people along the way as we possibly can. Now, over time, that took so much effort going to the individuals, asking each one of them for through the three-step process to get to the point where they couldn't provide the evidence they were legitimate or there was a debt, that we slowly started saying, well, okay, why don't we just go to the top, and once we've found that there's no debt or there's no evidence of lawful government authority, why don't we just point to that, and then we'll go back to the people at the bottom and say, here's the judgment we got from your boss, until that's invalidated, well, it stands as the ultimate statement of facts that there is either no debt or you're not real government. So at that point, it was like a streamlining of the process, and we could point at that judgment that we'd reached through a administrative process, just like the UCC filings have done. And so when the UCC filings came out through the One People's Public Trust, we were faced with the possibility of going, well, okay, we can either do our own filings, and some templates were starting to come out, and they're a bit perplexing, really. And I think chatting with Chris and others, we're going, this is going to be a struggle for a lot of people. And I admit I was struggling with some of those filings as well in the process. It's a bit boggling. And we thought, well, this has already been done. We've got the judgment that it's game over. They've been foreclosed on. Why don't we do the same as what we were doing to the CEO of the bank or the head of the department and point at the judgment that was reached with them and say, well, until that's invalidated, it stands. And that's where the courtesy came from. Courtesy notice, we basically pointed at that those UCC filings and said, well, sorry, fellas, it's already been done. Game over. In that sense, let's work our way through this courtesy notice. Does that help, Lisa?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you're informing them, you're educating them that not just in the way you were doing it, that their corporation isn't valid or their standing and authority isn't valid. Now you're actually pointing out to them and saying that whole structure that you believe surrounds you and protects you of the corporation is not there. You're actually standing there naked as an individual. Now, person to person, let's talk.
Exactly. Yeah.
Scott.
Hey, Bob.
Hey. One question. Can you explain what kind of reaction did you get when you started asking those questions?
Oh, good question. The reaction ranged from, and this is at the at all levels, whether it be right down the bottom of an organisation or the top. And when I say the top, I'm thinking the top of a branch of a much higher pyramid. The reaction was, it ranged from absolute rejection. So you get a letter that comes back from their legal department that says, your claims have no legal authority. And most of the time, it wasn't a claim, it was a question. So here's a really bright lawyer who can't distinguish between a claim and a question. So that was hilarious itself. The other thing would happen would be you'd get they would try and label your document as a letter. I mean, I'm putting a demand to them for validation of authority or the substantiation of a debt. So I'm not writing a dear grandma letter signed Love and Kisses Scott. I'm writing a demand for validation. And you get a response that comes back that tries to belittle your demands and label it as a letter. So you get your claims are baseless. Or the other one would be they would point out a document that they believed gave them the authority to do what they're doing. A perfect example is local government. They would go to the Local Government Act of whatever state created it, point at that, and use that to steamroll you. Now, the fact that I was asking for the origin of that act and going all the way back to its inception didn't seem to faze them. They would focus on one little bit that gave them their security blanket, and that's what they were taught. They were like taught, there's the act and you can rely on that. So there was a lot of people who were holding on to an interim or mid-level document and translated that to banks. The first thing the banks did was they pointed a mortgage contract or a loan agreement and pointed your signature and say, look, you signed the document. There's the contract. the fact that you're trying to go back to the before that to whether there really is a debt that a contract could enforce was irrelevant to them. They were seeing an interim document that they believed was their basis for their authority or a debt, and they would throw that at you. Does that help, Bob?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
No worries.
So now just explain the evolution of that process a little bit more with what the courtesy notice is now doing.
Okay. So basically what we're doing is we're saying, here we go, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen. Here are these filings that are saying that the banks and governments have been foreclosed upon. In that event, you're acting as a individual in full unlimited liability. Now, unless you have a contract between me and you, individual to individual, that would compel performance, that would compel me to pay you or do something, then you don't have anything to do so. You don't have anything to compel me to do something. There is no agreement or arrangement in behind between us. So in that event, I'm going to offer you my terms should you wish to interact and deal with me. So it's quite a logical sort of process. Your banks and governments are foreclosed. Unless there's a contract that governs the relationship between the two of you, you offer your terms and conditions, and you go from that point there. Then that individual has the choice of saying, well, yeah, I choose to interact. And in interacting, they're accepting your terms and conditions. They also have the choice to go, actually, no, don't really like that, and I'm going to go away and leave this guy alone. And in that action, they have rejected those terms and conditions, and off they go on their merry way, which for most people, I think, would be the outcome they'd be very happy with. Is that where you're headed, Lisa?
Lovely, yes, thank you. So let's move into to the how and the why of what to do with this courtesy notice now that it's available to us. Now, one of the things I want to... firstly, before I move on any further, if you're at Blog Talk Radio and you want to get involved in the chat, please go to freedomreigns.us and click on chat. There is a chat room over there for everybody. So got that out of the way. We've got close to 200, maybe even more this week, 200,000 people listening to this show. Now, for every matter that is before you, whether it's to do with the local council, whether it's to do with the police, parking fines, a court, a bank, whatever, there's probably half a dozen people, individuals, that you've heard from, up to. Now, especially if you've got, say, a debt collector, then you're dealing with a debt collector, you're dealing with the original bank, you're dealing with a few individuals. If we could get 100,000 or 200,000 of these courtesy notices into the system, that's a huge wake-up call. So, and I don't believe that there's anybody that probably can't find anyone who's, to be a recipient of one of these. So let's move into why you would use it under what circumstances and who gets it, who is the recipient. There seems to be some confusion about that.
Okay. Well, I suppose what we're doing is we've drawn a line in the sand. So we're not digging up past matters. We're looking at things that are being pursued in the now and future. So let's just say you get a demand in for some form of payment or a fine, or you've got to apply for a license or whatever. It's been written on a nice little corporate letterhead. Somewhere behind that is a living being who's authored that and put it in the envelope and sent it to you. A lot of times you'll find that, and legal and lawyers are brilliant at this. They hide behind the name of the company, and they'll sign their documents in the same way. They'll sign it as XYZ Lawyers. Ideally, what you're looking to do, well, not ideally, it's addressed to an individual. You're looking for the name of the person who's actually written to you, and that's where you're going to write it to. Now, I think what you're asking, Lisa, was say there's more than one person involved in this matter that you're dealing with. It's likely there's someone who has originated the action way back, and what's likely to have happened is perhaps you were unable to resolve that matter to their satisfaction, and they engaged someone else to try and compel some performance from you, and they might have even engaged someone else to assist them. And the typical one is where, say, you get a parking ticket and they refer the matter to the Fines Enforcement Registry, and the Fines Enforcement Registry go and talk to the court. And the court gets a process server, and there's a whole chain of people who've got involved. Now, it's one matter, and yet there's all these different players involved. Ideally, I would be looking at finding the names of the individuals that have been involved in that and addressing a notice to them that lays them out, that gives them that courtesy notice. That's probably the way of who to send it to. Now, you also mentioned about how it works. Is that something you wanted me to get into?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so the how is essentially you're sending it out there as a courtesy. Now, I think I mentioned sometime before that there's two possible or two example energies that can be performed with this. You send out the courtesy notice thinking, oh, geez, I hope this works. I really don't want to pay that parking fine. And, geez, I hope it works. And the other one is, well, okay, that's the evidence that the banks and governments have been foreclosed. I'm letting this person know that that's what's happened, and I expect that in the future the terms that I'm offering is how this relationship will be governed by. So there's two different intents that have gone behind that. So I would say that if you're in the camp of, oh, geez, I hope this works, the outcome that you might receive, I suspect, will be entirely different from one who sends it from the point of view of, well, yeah, it's game over. They've been foreclosed. It's done and dusted. Don't need to worry about this. I'm just putting my terms up on the price list, almost like at the coffee shop, you post the price list. So the how is there's a certain basis before I'd step in to do it. Does that assist with that, Lisa?
Yeah, but I'm just noticing in the chat we still have at least one individual who's quite confused about what this
right.
is and about why, perhaps how it works. So the easiest way to explain it, Michael, in the chat room is either you believe in the UCC filings and the One People's Trust works and it's done. Now, if you don't believe it, then don't move forward with a courtesy notice would be my suggestion. But if you do believe it, if you understand and believe what has been done by the People's Trust, then what you're doing with this courtesy notice is you are educating another human being, another individual, that the corporation that they believe they work for no longer exists, and that the action that they are taking against you is on them personally. Because the whole corporate structure is based on limited liability. Nobody's responsible for their actions. Everybody can pass it up the line and say, I'm only doing what I was told. And this changes the whole playing field. This puts that person in front of you, person to person, and you're educating them on that fact. And it, you're also taking on the unlimited responsibility and liability for your own actions as well. So this is not a legal process. This piece of paper is not a, it's not a legal document as such. It's referring to legal documents. It's referring to a process that's already taken place. It's referring to the foreclosure. You're pointing it out to them, and you're letting them know that the whole landscape that they believe they work under and in has changed. And if they want to pursue this matter with you, that they're doing so as an individual, which is no different to some stranger coming up to you in the street and putting a gun to your head and saying, give me your money, give me your wallet, which is, and maybe you could look at the courtesy notice as Paul Hogan saying, that's not a knife, this is a knife. So,
Lish, if I could just take up on that point, this is very much a lawful and legal document. One of the things that's a touch confusing is the term legal. Now, legalese, the language used in statutory law, is something that has been removed from the landscape. It's not there anymore. The term legal appears in these documents because it still has a context in UCC law, which has been retained. So you'll see the phrase lawful and legal in there, and that's because this document is built around universal law, common law, and UCC law. So it's hence the double-up phrase lawful and legal still is there. So, but it is very much a lawful document in the common law and universal law context, and a legal document in the UCC context, or legal and probably would be lawful and legal in UCC context. So we've had people wanting to remove the word legal out of the courtesy notice, and please do not do that. That is specifically put in there by Heather, who did the final review on this and corrected it to the standard that it needs to be at. I just needed to put that in there, Lisa, just to make sure people aren't confused about the terminology.
Another thing I wanted to point out, this is a notice, and just so that people aren't confused, you are not arguing any points here. A notice is different because you're just pointing out to an existing fact.
Yes.
And so don't get the idea that you're here arguing whether or not they're foreclosed on. You're pointing out the fact that they are. And this is where it's very important. If you don't believe it, if it's not real to you, then you really shouldn't be in any position to notice anyone, because it's not real to you. So people have to make a choice. They have to decide, is this something that resonates? Is there anyone that stands between me and my creator? And if you either believe that, or you know that in your heart, or you're still wavering, because a lot of people are asked the question, you know, where does the authority come from? We're moving beyond corporation, beyond corporate jurisdiction, and we're making a claim that, look, you have no jurisdiction beyond this point. I didn't have a contract with you. These are the facts. And it's a completely different way of approaching than going into the courtroom and trying to argue your point. You're just pointing to a fact.
One of the questions that's coming up in the chat room is, what about people who are already in prison? Now, this is something I've been asking about too. People who are in prison for victimless crimes. Because when I've brought it up in the past, people seem to think I wanted to let every rapist and murderer out on the street. No, I don't. We're talking about victimless crimes here, paper crimes, for the most part. Yes, Scott.
Sorry, Lisa, one thing that might be worth exploring with that regard to that is the family of that person who's in jail for a victimless crime, would they be suffering harm as a result of not experiencing the company of being with their family member in jail?
Absolutely.
And would that be a harm that's one might be able to invoice for as a result of turning up at the prison and providing a courtesy notice to the gentleman maintaining that harm.
Wouldn't you go to the person who signed off on the, to the judge who signed off on the
I'd go to every individual that's, I'd go to, if that were my family in that jail, I'd be going to every individual who was blocking me from experiencing that, the company of the family member, every single one of them.
Not only that, Scott, the immediate family will be suffering financially from that person being, you know, in jail instead of, you know, doing what they would normally do.
Yeah, so it's you can translate there's a harm that's being suffered, not necessarily by the individual inside who's unable to provide one of these courtesy notices. The family on the outside are also suffering the harm and can serve those courtesy notices.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've got Dee with us too. Dee, are you there?
I am here, hiding in the background.
Lovely, lovely. Is there anything you wanted to add in regards to the courtesy notices at this point?
No, you guys are, I'm just sitting back here and listening to you guys tell it like it is. It's awesome.
Cool. Well, your mic's unmuted at my end, so anytime you want to join in, just do so.
Well, you know me. I can't keep my mouth shut. If I have something to say, you'll all hear it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I could just bring a couple of questions and things that have popped up about the courtesy notice itself. I had a suggested change of providing a bit more area in the addressing at the top of page one for longish names of claims and longish addresses and so forth, and so we will do that. We're not going to change anything else in the document itself at this point, there except for there's one number which we have to add in there at the moment, which will go in the next update, also very shortly. We've picked up all of the odd little bits of grammar on the last page. Well, not all, there's just two or three little grammatical things. The last page is, in fact, the description of the OPPT, you know, the story of the OPPT. And I just need to let everybody know that domicile, domicile, is actually spelled correctly in this document. There's no, in the context it's used here, there's no E on the end. And I'd just like to, there were a number of other people who inquired about the meanings of various phrases, and I'd just like to point you to the audio file that we've put up there on the website where Ken and Scott and I have a conversation where we actually go through the document paragraph by paragraph, the whole thing. Each paragraph discussed and its context, and on the way we talk about, you know, the logic behind how you address, you know, address the document, the logic behind how you actually distribute it, you know, to whom and why, and it's very comprehensive. So if anyone's got any questions, that is a great place to start. Now, one
and
of the other things. Yeah,
sorry,
go ahead.
I just want to sort of back up what you're saying that. If you get the document from the opt-in website, then that will be the, I don't want to use the word official because it's not right, but it will be the endorsed version. And because people do want to change things in it without understanding, like thinking that domicile is a spelling mistake, and it, but it's not. It's very specific. With the word, and wanting to take out words like legal or lawful because they think they're not relevant now, they are in the context of the courtesy notice. So every word that's in there is there for a reason. If you get it from a different website, this is excluding, of course, removing the shackles, Kawila Pele and American Kabuki because they are using the same version. But if you get it from anywhere else, we can't assure you that it hasn't been tampered with. And don't, if you do change it, I mean, everyone's entitled to do what they want here, but just know that you are stepping away from the very well thought out, very well considered process that went into those documents. Every word was very well considered. And it has Heather's input in it as well. She contributed to that as well. And I certainly wouldn't want to be changing it myself.
Yeah. One of the aspects that Scott has touched upon is the effect these documents have when they're circulating around inside organisations and being discussed inside organisations. There's an energetic injection that we're making into them at that point. That is actually one of the key things that's going on here, because you'll find that the system at this point will initially push you back. But the energy in these documents, Heather's described them as 4D documents, and the reason she describes them that way is that they're built around an I am statement and free will choices. And these things have actually, the rights to actually do that are one of the things that's bound up in the UCC filings. The one people have guaranteed right to actually be who they are, that is the actual person and not some statutory fiction, and they have free will choice, and that's actually in the statutes and clearly written into the CVAC specifications. So if you want to say, to summarize what the energetic situation is, you're injecting a 4D document into a 3D environment, and it'll be bouncing around having energetic effects, and that is one of the most important things that's going on at this stage.
You know, we do have Ron Van Dyke on the line, and he's in the queue, and he's dealing with an issue right now that is going to relate to a lot of people. So I'd like to bring him out while I've still got Scott here as well. Ron, you're unmuted.
I'm here.
Hello.
I'm glad to be on, Lisa. Good to talk to you and everyone else. You listened to my video yesterday, so you know a little bit where I'm coming from.
Yes.
I did get some clarification on those documents that were received on Saturday. I interpreted it incorrectly looking at the heading. As I looked at it more closely, they didn't actually dismiss my complaint. They gave me 14 more days. They're recommending dismissing my complaint, which is a Title 42 action in federal court, because the local courts have been trying to steal my house for several years, and I've held them off with various legal things, including filing my own UCC one in 2010, and then I held them off for almost a whole year with an appeal, which ultimately the respondent never responded, and it was dismissed without a response from the respondent following my initial brief. And then I brought forth my land patent on the property, and I've just done a whole lot of things. It's in a common law, that property is held in a common law trust, so I don't even own it. And just before the week before Christmas, they sent me a notice that they own my house, the bank, and that's when I filed the Title 42 claim. And they keep saying, they keep finding little technical issues that I'm not addressing something exactly according to their rules and code. And I have noticed them in the last two submissions about the One People's Public Trust ruling. I've sent them actual documents as attachments in my case. They have not responded to those at all. I have not sent a courtesy notice yet, but that, I believe, is to be my next step. But my question basically was, and I'm feeling much more confident because of what Spirit showed me since I did the video yesterday, that this thing is, there's energies involved here that are beyond what meets the eye, and it's sweeping things away and sweeping things clean. And I just felt such peace when I was seeing those images this morning in meditation, and I talked about that on my video today. But my concern yesterday was, who's going to enforce it? And it almost became a moot question to me today, because I really am feeling much more confident that this is part of a divine plan, and what you're saying about believing in it is absolutely essential. If you don't believe in it, then obviously you shouldn't use it. You need to be guided within your own spirit, within your own heart, and trust your own gut in order to for it to actually do what it's designed to do. So,
yeah,
the question of
where's the enforcement come from has been loud and clear for weeks. And
yes, and a lot
we
of,
have to reach back to the individuals. We are the enforcement. That no one else is coming to our rescue to enforce this in some respects. Now, in other respects, I agree with you completely. This is a grander, spiritual, multidimensional endeavor that we're, you know, an adventure that we're in right now. But we're so used to, and we've all grown up in, this limited liability corporate structure, and we're not used to being our own enforcement, whether it's called the cops, whether it's called somebody else to come and do the dirty work. We're so disassociated from our own power that we don't understand that we are the enforcement, because that's all there is left. It's just us. There's us and the Creator and the planet. So who else is going to enforce it?
Lisa, if I can jump in there.
Yes.
One of the things that I'm finding when people ask the question of who's going to enforce it is it appears that it's an externalization of that enforcement. And the analogy is, if you're standing around the coffee machine at work and someone drops a cup on the floor and it just shatters into 1,000 pieces, and someone stands there and says, well, who's going to clean that up? The inference is that that person's asked who's going to clean it up because they don't want to. And the same thing pretty much applies here when that's the who's going to enforce it. It's because I don't want to. Or there's at least the possibility of that. And what I'm seeing is what we're doing by sending these courtesy notices is we are doing the enforcement. And I gave the analogy just recently. Say one person wrote to an individual at your local council. You get an effect. 10 people write to one individual at the local council. You get a different effect. 10 people write to 10 individuals at the local council. I'd suggest you get an even varied effect. And you can see where that compounding process goes on. If we are the ones doing the enforcement and we focus on one individual who is maintaining the slavery system, I suspect that we'll start getting results.
Yeah, I have a suggestion here, and because I'm sitting listening to this, and I've seen a couple of examples of the foreclosed legal system saying back to people who are sending courtesy notices, well, this is just meaningless. No, we don't. We know what is this? That is just a complete deflection, and in and of itself, is the only response they can actually take at this point. The fact that they're responding in this fashion means they're bothered. It means we're getting flack. We're over the target. And what I'd suggest is this: there are people around you and people you have contact with who actually are doing the same thing with their own problems. What Scott's suggesting is that you engage those people to support you by sending copies of the courtesy notice to the people who are trying to say this is not real, and saying you're obliged. This is a part of the legal landscape. Whether you think you've been foreclosed on or not, you're obliged to actually check these filings out. And if you want to argue against them, you better actually rebut them with particularity and specificity. Otherwise, you will ultimately be personally leaned.
Another thing I want to point out is we also have to change the energy of the situation. Open up your awareness a little bit more. If you have a beloved pet, how many of you look at that pet and say, I own him? Or is he more like a friend? You have a relationship. You don't feel as though that you own that pet. When most of the people that I know that are pet owner, you know, pet lovers, they look at that pet as a friend, a member of the family. Everything around you And everything that you believe that you're fighting for, are you fighting, you know, to be another slave owner? This fighting over titles and ownership? Or maybe you can change that energy because you have a relationship with your home. Because it becomes, it has a consciousness of its own. It has a spirit of its own. The Native Americans would say, the spirit of my grandfathers lives in this land. And this is something that, you know, we need to start to have a different relationship. You know, are you fighting to hold title of ownership, or do you want to continue in your relationship and invite the land, invite the home to that type of relationship? Free them. And then you'll find that the energy shifts, that you'll feel the winds change, because this is the direction the current is going. This is the direction that the energy is flowing, and they know this. Get in line with that, and there's multi-dimensional things that go on in every experience, in every situation that anyone is facing, and you've got to look at all of the aspects.
Indeed. As an example, there's actually a Facebook piece that's been posted by a Judge Layton, L-E-I-G-H-T-O-N. Now, Judge Layton has given exactly what I thought we would see. This, I expected this to appear, basically saying, oh, this is meaningless stuff from the you know, the delusionary sovereign citizen group. He has not actually deflected the filings in any way, shape or form from a legal standpoint. And is exactly, in fact, it's the only pushback they can do. And our response to that should be, as a group, to, if people are going to distribute deflections from the system like this, what I'd ask you to do is this: put in a contact point for the person who's the source of the deflection. In this case, it's a judge. He'll have an email address or a fax number or a mail address. If you're going to put up material like this, put up a contact point so that we, the people, can actually support our brothers by either just a direct contact saying, you know, you're obliged under the laws of the United States, if you want to pretend that they're still in play, to actually deflect these filings or stand down because you've been foreclosed. You don't have a choice in this matter. You're actually obliged to do it. You're failing in your fiduciary duty to do it. And if that person received, as Scott said, 10 such emails, faxes or letters, or 50 or 100 or maybe 5,000 or 10,000, we've done a couple of Facebook blasts for various media outlets, and we've had 15, 20,000 people dump their opinion in one spot. That has to have an effect. And I think we need to do that. This is part of us being the enforcement. I don't want to see people to feel that they're actually enforcing alone. Everyone around us in this movement is keen to participate. We just need to get the information out there so that we know where we can put that energy. And as Bob said, we actually have to put it in the right energy. It's a case of saying, no, you know, we're not going to take that because we know you've been foreclosed. We know that you know you've been foreclosed. This is just a dance you're doing to maintain a pretense, and we're not going to accept that. And we have to do it with as many voices as possible. It's all about the voices, folks. If they can hear the energy from us, there is no way that ultimately they can hide behind essentially what is bluster.
Chris, nice work. And I'd say to add to that post by that judge, look for what wasn't said by him. Look, and like you said, he did not deflect any of the filings at the UCC. You can go through, and it seems the common thread through any letter that's come back in response to a courtesy notice, you'll find that there's no rebuttal with specificity, etc. It'll be look for what isn't there. And you'll find they lack completely any evidence, any rebuttal. They'll be citing various little acts or statutes or things in the interim, and there will be a complete lack of any sort of evidence that would rebut the UCC filings.
Guys, there's somebody in the chat room who just wants to understand. They get that it refers to governments, or corporations masquerading as governments, and they get that it applies to banks. But does it apply to all other corporations? And my understanding is this, and if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me. Corporations get their corporate charter from government. Now, if the government is invalid, if the government itself is a corporation pretending to be a government and has been foreclosed on and is no longer, then everything below that. So, yes, all corporations, whether they're operating as a hospital, a private hospital, whether they're operating as, what was your other question, a loan company, anything that's a corporation, its corporate charter was cancelled. It was deemed invalid.
There's a reason. Understand that this was part of the slavery system. There's a reason why everything is centralized. They're all going to the same place because they're all feeding the same entity. So it had to be structured that way.
And we've just taken out the structure.
Yeah, if you listen to Heather's interviews, and Ron is absolutely right, listen to Heather's interviews speaking about the processes they actually undertook. They found, I think, two nexus points in the system, which they confirmed that if they cut the head of the beast off at that point, the rest of the body would die because that's what it was attached to. And it was the BIS, and I think the second one was the United Nations, but don't quote me on that. But they appear to be the two points where the snip was done. And that the rest of the structure underneath it was at that point terminated as well. I think that's effectively what they did. So yes, all corporations, it doesn't mean they're not running anymore, because folks, the thing that makes a corporation is the energy of the employees in it. Take that out and it isn't one. Now that's all still in there. And they're our brethren in the one people. They are energizing those things. And the message we've got to get to them is that, first of all, that the old structure is gone, and secondly, that there is a real alternative under the CVAC system, which is going to completely change their lives.
Okay, we're still asking for more clarification. Yes. If they are, I don't know what you mean by a medical facility as such. If you're talking about a private hospital that operates as a corporation, then yes. Loan companies, yes. Utility companies even. However, I wouldn't go not paying utility bills just yet. We're not there yet. Personally, I wouldn't go there. Now, the other question was, what about credit cards and loans where I have actually gotten money from them and I've used it? Don't I have a moral obligation to pay it back? Let's talk about a moral obligation for a second, because when you applied for that loan, your signature on the dotted line created the funds and they gave them to you. That should have been the end of it. That should have been the end of the transaction. You went to the bank, you signed for it, the money was essentially created at that point and given to you. The bank, unfortunately, and Bob can clarify all of this probably in a much better way. In fact, I'll give it to you now, Bob. You can do it from here.
You're the source of all value. The whole system is built on your energy. So they require your signature. So you're the one that's giving the value. They're essentially creating money out of thin air. And it's just the value that you give it. So you've given the value, they create the money, and you spent it. Now who owes what? It's a done deal.
Yeah, could I actually throw something else into the mix there, Bob, that'll clarify the inequity of the situation? What we need to remember, and we all know this, but we tend to forget how it works, is that every time we sign something, it gets monetized. So let's say you apply for a $50,000 loan of some kind. Your signature goes on a piece of paper and they process it, in inverted commas, and they say they put the money in your account. What they don't tell you is they then turn around and resell that signature as a derivative, what they do is they group them together in large numbers and create bonds out of them and resell the bonds. This is your mortgage-backed securities as an example. And let's look at the, 2 weeks after you take out that loan and they give you that money, and it doesn't really matter whether it's for a house or anything. If you sign something, that's the important act in the whole thing. 2 weeks later, they will have taken your signature and monetized it for at minimum of 10 times the amount that you signed for, that they gave you, and they will have that money sitting in their bank account. So the balance 2 weeks later, say that you borrowed $50,000, okay, well, they've probably turned around and made $500,000. And you've still got a debt. They don't ring you up and say, hey, Fred, we did really well. We sold, we monetized your signature and we sold it off and we made $500,000 of it. So we've got plenty of money and don't worry about paying us back. Okay. But no, you don't get that phone call. They still expect you to pay the money. And if you don't, they'll come after your assets. So you've got to look at how far ahead of you they are, simply by the fact that they stole their signature from you, stole your signature from you, and made money from it. And this is how they make phenomenal profits. In this country here, we've got four major banks, and every year they post some total between them of $16 billion profit out of 22 million people. How does that work? Just how does that work? This is the rampant profiteering. Absolutely, that interest. And when they come after you and take your house off you, they also get insurance because they insure the whole transaction to make sure they can double dip. They want to extract your asset from you and collect money from the insurance company, and they end up making an absolute fortune. And they make it out of one simple act: you put your signature, your value, on paper for them, and they've tricked you and lied to you. And they take it out and make a fortune on it. That's how the system works. That's inequity.
Chris, could I add to that with a brief example? If you go back to the original treasuries that used to bring the money into existence and spend it on the bridges and roads and infrastructure and that sort of thing, you think, oh, yeah, that money came out of thin air. Now, the actual effort that was expended in building the bridge, I would say, is the real value. That comes from the people. So the money was just a piece of paper, a representation of the value and effort that went into building that bridge. So when the treasuries created that money, it was just representative of the energy. Now, if that was stolen from the people and you by the private banks, and then you had to go and borrow that back when you were the original source of that value, then that's probably giving you a better idea as to where the fraud's coming from. If you're the original source of that value and the funds from the effort that's being created and put out into the community, you're the source. Borrowing it from them is criminal.
Okay, I just want to direct people. Am I muted? No. I just want to direct people. I did put a link in the chat room to the Wake Up World article. That'll answer a lot of your questions too, because it explains this. It explains the corporate structure. It explains the birth certificate. It explains quite a few things, and then how and what the One People's Trust is and what it did, in a really nice, concise article. Something for you to share with others as well. It's a brilliant description. So I have put the link in the chat room. I'll put it again now because it's a very busy chat room. So it's at wakeupworld.com and wakeup-world.com, and you'll find an article called All Corporations, Banks and Governments Lawfully Foreclosed by OPPT. Please go and read that. If your understanding about the banking process isn't clear, if your understanding about what your birth certificate actually isn't clear. Bob, do you remember on a radio show we did last year, I gave the Monopoly game analogy when you come to my house?
Yes, I do.
Shall I repeat it now?
Yes, it was perfect.
Okay. Okay, my house represents the planet, and I would say represent the cabal. Now, I invite you, and you make your own free will choice to come to my house. And when you walk in the door, I shut the door, I lock the door behind you. There's no escape. And I say, welcome. As long as you're here, you're going to play Monopoly. And hang on, I wasn't told I was going to play Monopoly. I didn't have to. Why do I have to play Monopoly? I don't want to play Monopoly. Well, sorry, but the door closed, the windows are locked. You're not leaving. We play Monopoly. That's the house rules. And if I'm going to insist that you play Monopoly, I have to do two things. I have to give you a token so you can play on the board, and that token is your birth certificate. And I have to give you some bank money to start you off. And from that birth certificate, a trust account is in fact established. And so you've got your two things. But what I don't tell you, I don't give you the rules to the game. You've got to figure it out as you go. And I don't tell you that every time you pass go, you collect $200. I keep it for myself. I don't tell you you've got to get out of jail free card. And you're playing this game of Monopoly based on the rules that you figure out as you go. I'm the one with the instruction manual. I know exactly how it works. And you will not leave that board until you're bankrupt, as is everybody that happens to walk into my house. So it just goes back to the question of what happens when you apply for a loan or whatever. It's taken out of that. What you're really doing with that signature is you're authorizing them to take it out of that fund, that trust that was established for you through your birth certificate. Now, if all being good and well, when you were born and that trust account was established, you would have been named as the beneficiary and your needs would be met by that trust. That didn't happen because by the time when you were 7 years old, just like when anybody goes missing, once they're gone for 7 years, they're declared dead. When you're seven, they declare you dead, unless you step forward and make that claim. I'm here, I'm alive, I'd like access to my funds to pay for to cover my needs and desires while I'm here. That doesn't happen. So they turn around and they nominate themselves as the beneficiary. So every time you do something with a signature, you're granting them access to that fund, that account, that trust. Is that accurate? Am I explaining this well?
And this is the system that has collapsed. I mean, you could go into, there's lots of information about how the whole system works, but it's collapsed. It's done. It's over.
Indeed. Now, I want to bring Dee out. Yeah, I want to bring Dee out. She's one of the things that is, well, she can confirm this. Dee, the intel about what may or may not happen this week.
Sorry, say that again, love. You're breaking up a little bit. I didn't hear the question.
The intel you've been getting of late about what may or may not happen this week and what the implications are for the powers that were.
Wow. There's been a lot of interesting stuff coming up this week. And most sources seem to be pointing to the fact that the powers that were are going to push the new system, the new financial system, through this week.
Now, this means Nasara and et al., yes?
Supposedly, yes. That opens the door to a whole slew of questions, though. With other stuff that is going on right now, when I jumped off the air there, I had to take a couple of intel calls. There are things going on in the background that are, as I've been saying for the last few weeks, are serious red flags for me. Because we've always been told that when the new system comes online, that will go hand in hand with the rollout of Nasara. Now, granted, there's a lot of questions about Nasara because the reality of it is, as I've said before, the true absolute details of Nisara are locked tight. We have certain details, certain things that we've been told that are part of Nisara. But in actual fact, we don't have, you know, the list written out there from A to Z of exactly what it will mean. Having said that, there's certain things that are supposed to be involved in Nisara that make me question what we're hearing, like I said, in the way of intel. And it's going to be very interesting. I will have a lot more to say once they roll that system out. Because once I watch and see how it rolls out, I'll be able to look back and say, okay, well, now we've got a problem. They've said this in their so-called announcements, but that's not true. Or if it is true, that's not the way it's supposed to be, according to the information we have to do with Nisara. And I'll give you an example. The Supreme Court met last week to rule on Obama's birth certificate and several other things. That ruling is supposed to be announced tomorrow. If that announcement comes out and they say, Obama could never have been president because, you know, we've ruled that his birth certificate is illegitimate and the social insurance card, et cetera, then you have to sit there and go, okay, wait a second. If they're using this as the excuse to pull him out of the presidency, that doesn't fit with Nisara. And that, to me, right there is kind of a, you know, a little bit of a red herring, right? They're okay, well, we'll use this over here to distract the people, and then you'll set up a new government. But that's not the way it should be. My understanding is that the announcements should include the fact that there is a new interim government and the reasons why. And if the system rolls out and we don't get that, then it goes back to what I've been saying last week and a couple of weeks before that as well. We have a problem. You know, Chris, I don't know, you and I were talking about it on the call and Lisa the other night.
The impression I'm getting, Di, is this is a subsumed version of Nisara that's been massaged for the current agenda, and that they'll pick and choose bits and pieces. And because Nisara looms so large in so many people's mind, provided they revalue the dinar, everyone will go, oh, they revalued the dinar, because there's so many people waiting for that. Yeah. And they'll say, yes, this is Nisara, when actually it isn't. It's basically them, their last gasp attempt.
Because it's hard for me to talk into it like this. Yeah.
Yep, we can hear you, Brian. Yep, you're there, man. It's an attempt by them to regain the leading hand in martial arts terms. What happens during an exchange is that one person is always slightly ahead of the other and has a slight advantage in timing. Okay, and it's called a window. You have a slight window over your opponent. I think it's a play to get a window, because they know time's up and they've got no other options. Because if this fails, which it probably will, they're stuffed. And if they wait, they know that the OPPT will ultimately launch the CVAX, and they're stuffed again. So they're in a checkmate position. This is my opinion, based on our discussion the other day. And if anything's come up to kind of change that in the interim, please let us know. But that's kind of the way I'm feeling about it. That it really is a last play for them. You know, that they've decided to try and do this, and we'll have to see how it pans out for them. But if the light workers out there recognize it for what it is, which is it's a stuffed up, manipulated version of the original Nisara. When was it, D? 20 years ago, Nisara?
Hold on. If you ask me to do math, that's not fair, Chris.
Oh, just give a year.
90, in the 90s.
So even the mid-90s, you know, that's at least 15 years ago, 17 years ago. They've had plenty of time to play with it and make it their own.
you know, and oh, this goes back to like how quickly was the whole Kona thing in Africa debunked? Even faster, the Sandy Hook.
Oh yeah.
You know, and now we're debunking it before it happens.
Well, this is the thing, Bob. I was talking about this with a couple of people and today. You have a whole slew of people, and I'm talking, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of people who are following the Iraqi dinar revaluation, the prosperity programs, the prosperity packages, and the various things like the St. Germain Trust and the World Global Settlements, et cetera, the collateral accounts. If any one of them, no matter how, they could be the most complete right-wing conservative person, if they're looking at information on the Iraqi dinar revaluation, for example, if you spend any amount of time researching that over the last few years, you are going to come across tons and tons of sites that talk not only about the RV, they're also talking about Nisara, they're also talking about prosperity packages, et cetera, and all these global funds. So even if they didn't want to become educated on these things, they have been. They have an understanding, even if they don't want to believe it, they have a knowledge in the backs of their mind of the various things that are supposed to happen. And I said this yesterday. Let's say that the new system rolls out tomorrow. And everyone cheers, of course. There's going to be people cheering, crying in the streets, the whole bit. Oh, my goodness, Nisara, we've been saved. You know, the evil cabal is gone. All of this. You know, we're going to have money now. And say the announcements come out and they say, well, you know, we've done this and this is the reason why. But let's face it, it's pretty whitewashed. If the day after that, people walk out of their homes and they see chemtrails in the sky, what are you going to think? Wait a second. Why are there chemtrails in the sky? Why is the GMO food still in the stores? Why is the FDA still doing everything they can to stop every natural health food, natural medicine for all these diseases like cancer and AIDS, et cetera? Why are there still commercials on TV advertising vaccines? Wait a second. Because these people, whether they wanted to or not, have been educated at least to a certain extent. All these people in the Patriot Movement, same thing. They've been reading all these other sites. They have absorbed this information. And quite frankly, if the cabal thinks that they can pull this and pull the wool over the people's eyes, they're about to be severely shocked. Because you might get people dancing in the streets and cheering and going off to the bank to cash in their Iraqi dinar, their Vietnamese dong, and their Indian rupees, etc. But once that high comes down, I give it less in 3 or 4 days, people are going to immediately be going, well, wait a second. They didn't say anything about this. They didn't say anything about 9/11. They didn't say anything about the straw man accounts. They didn't say anything about the fact that the government's a corporation. They didn't say anything about the fact of how these big mega pharmacy, big oil, all these lobbyists have been buying out everyone. Well, wait a second.
Like we said in previous shows, you know, it's wrapped up as it's slavery 2.0, just wrapped up in prettier packaging, and the leash they've got on you is a little bit longer than it is now, and it's a distraction.
It is.
And hopefully, too many people will not fall for it.
Sorry, Dick, I just wanted to throw in something that you said the other day, that there's almost a bullet pointed checklist. If this is real Nisara, what should I be seeing?
Yeah.
And what you should be seeing is that the banks basically should be, you know, the people running the banks the previous day shouldn't be there anymore. Tick.
Yeah.
Are they or a cross? No, they're still there. Are the same politicians still there? Yes. Are we still seeing chemtrails? Yes. Have they fully disclosed all of the skullduggery and scumbaggery that's gone on in the last 20, 30 years even? Forget about the previous several hundred, even in the last 10 years. Have they disclosed any of that? Yes or no? And if you're not seeing these things, then you're not seeing the SARA. You're just seeing a polished up version to give us the same cage, the same cell, shinier bars, bigger screen TV and colder beer, but it's the same cell and it's run by the same gangsters.
Yep.
Guys, we do have a caller with a lot of questions, and I'm wanting to see if I can find him. Michael, is that you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, all right. Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call. Thanks for having this this radio show. It's it's a pleasure to listen so far. And I'm glad you you took my call because I've only recently become aware of the One People's Public Trust, you know, and so I've only done my research for about 24 hours now, but I've spent a considerable amount of time learning about it. And so when I hear you guys talk, I have a basic understanding of it, but I can't really keep up with the conversation too well. So I wanted to ask maybe a more basic question with a simpler premise, if you don't mind.
Yeah, okay. Sure. I'm sure it'll help others, so go for it.
All right. Well, just to give a little background, I spent the majority of my professional career in the military, and that was up until the middle of last year. So I got out, and ever since I got out, you know, I've really started to expand and elevate my awareness, my consciousness, and just become aware of you know, just what an illusion the world is. But what that's led me to do is kind of just go down the rabbit hole and pretty much like Alice in Wonderland, you know, there's no end to it. And then there's so many different things to research and to learn about. And this is another one of them. And you kind of don't know.
Everybody on this call has got their middle name Alice, so don't worry. You're in good company.
Well, you don't know. But you don't know where to get your information. You don't know what to believe. And I know that that's fear-based and paranoia-based and all that. And I get it. You know, I guess, you know, so people say, yeah, well, listen to your higher self and try and tune into information that way. It's really difficult for me to do that. So can you just maybe explain to me and some other people who might be having the same questions out there, why should we really buy into this idea in such a way that we kind of sacrifice our reputations, you know, because what you're really asking people to do is really, and what you've done, and I commend you for it, is really stepped out on a limb with this faith and this belief that this is how we are going to realize our full potential.
There's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I spent the last 15 years, you know, focused on the 2012 phenomenon and wondering what was going to happen after that, wondering what the world would look like post-2012. And I deeply believed we were at the end of an era, at the end of an age, and I wasn't into the fear porn. I didn't believe the world was going to end. I did believe it was the end of a paradigm. And there's so much about what the One People's Trust has done, whether it's from that legal framework of dealing with the UCC, whether it's from a more energetic framework, that just rings true to me completely. And, you know, I have gone, like you, I've spent years going down many different rabbit holes, trying different techniques, technologies, processes, paperwork, the whole shebang, ultimately, you know, at a dead end. And I had my moments of, can this be true? Can this be real? And my gut and my heart were saying yes. My head was going, sit on the fence, don't commit. But I can't deny how this feels ultimately. And anybody that I, and everybody that I trust with their intellectual understanding of this, with their legal understanding of this, with their heart-based understanding of this, feels the same way.
You know what the thing is about that too, Lisa? This is Brian. What's the caller's name?
Michael.
Michael.
So we've all been, you know, everybody that's on this call and the great majority of the people that are listening to it have been in the exact same shoes you're in. I mean, some of us have just recently stumbled onto the One People's Public Trust recently. Some people have been following alternative media for 15, 20 years like Lisa. But we all know how you feel. I mean, one big thing that we've done ever since we started doing these shows, ever since we started putting this information out there, is we're not looking to, you know, force anybody to believe it. You know, it's everybody's own personal free will choice to decide for themselves what they want to and what they do not want to believe. And for anybody that's a dedicated truth seeker, there's enough information out there regarding the One People's Public Trust and all the work that they've put out and they've done, you know, and the trustees have done, and that all of us have done since then, to go back and do a significant amount of due diligence for you to say, okay, I've gathered the data, here's what it says to me, and this is now what the conclusion that I'm drawing. You know, so when you say, is this something that I'm willing to put my reputation on, there's no one's reputations are at stake here. You know, if you believe in something and ultimately it doesn't end up being exactly the way you thought it was, no one's pointing a finger. You know, if you're not worried about anybody pointing a finger at you and saying, well, you're wrong, then you really have nothing to lose. You know, I'm now coming to a point where I'm announcing that my involvement in all this to all my friends on Facebook that I've known for years, to my family. And I'm doing it from a place of not being worried about what anybody has to say in regards to whether or not they believe it, because I'm not trying to force it down anybody's throat. I'm just letting people know what I'm doing, and if they decide to do their own homework and do their own research, and if they ever want to come to me and ask questions, I'm there. If they're not interested whatsoever, that's okay too. But it's an individual journey for everybody, and the only person that can make the determination as to how it resonates for you is you. But you just being on this call and listening and wanting to dive in and find out what rings true, that's that little glimmer of all that you'd need in order to pursue it further, to figure out if this is something that's ultimately something that you're going to believe or not. It's your own free will choice.
And Michael, it's going to force you to ask a couple questions about yourself, about what is true for you. You know, does it seem right that you should have to pay to live on Earth? Does that seem right to you? If it does, then fine. That's what resonates with you. Or does it seem right that another human can say that I have authority to tell you how you should eat, think, drink, when you're not harming anyone? Does that seem right to you? What resonates with you? And what all we're saying is, this is who I am. I am free. I am complete and absolute. Nothing stands between me and my source.
Indeed. Michael, Chris here. How are you?
Hey, Chris. Good, thanks. How are you, man?
Good, good. You're hearing a really good range of views here, from sort of spiritual,
I really am.
Spiritual to social.
I was just
going to add in my two pence. If you analyze what's happened to you, is it true to say that your experiences in the military deconstructed your beliefs about how the world actually worked? Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Everyone gets that same process of indoctrination.
Yeah, but you actually rejected that. You found that wasn't the explanation, because you looked around you and the doctrine that you were fed didn't match what you could see around you, because that's usually where this begins. Is that what happened to you?
That is precisely what happened.
Okay. So the difference between you at the moment, between the you and the people that surround you, your family and friends, is two things. Your paradigm compared to theirs has been deconstructed, and you're seeking to fill that vacuum with some truth. Now, they're not in that position at the moment, okay? And secondly, the information you've been gaining to fill that void inside you, they don't have that either. and it's almost impossible to go to someone and interesting.
Sorry, guys. That was
okay. It's almost impossible. If you go to a member of your family and you dump that on them, their paradigm isn't, you know, to them it's completely intact, and it gives them cognitive dissonance and actually makes them really uncomfortable and actually fearful. And the greatest mistake that we've all made this is to get really excited about something and start really trying to sell it to your families and friends, and you just can't do that. If they're not ready, they won't even look down the telescope like the bishops that wouldn't look down Galileo's telescope and just put him under house arrest for the rest of his life. You don't do that to yourself. As Brian suggested, you can present the information to them and casually suggest that it will be worth their while to actually look into it themselves. And if they really want to argue the point and try and talk you down from what they consider to be a high ledge on the edge of a building somewhere, and they will, all you have to say to them is, look, I've had a lot more exposure to really alternate kinds of information compared to you. You want to take a look at it, a serious look at it, and we'll have a serious conversation about it. But don't, from your position where you currently are, tell me that I'm wrong, because you and I just aren't in the same place, and you have to agree to disagree. I have a couple of relatives with whom I won't discuss this. Okay, we clashed when it came to the point. And I just said, okay, well, we just won't discuss this anymore. And I haven't, and I won't until disclosure takes place and they realize that, in fact, there was something going on. And it's unfortunate but true. That's the kind of position you need to take. But it doesn't mean you can't communicate things to them and try and introduce little things that might introduce them to an alternate way of thinking, but it might not be the one people's trust. It may be something completely different. Chemtrails attracts people's attention because you can point up in the sky and say, that doesn't look like condensation to me. It's been hanging there for 4 hours, dissipating. That can't be water vapor. You know, you say that to a mechanic and he'll say, yeah, probably not water vapor out of the exhaust of an aircraft. So there is a whole variety of techniques, if you like, strategies for introducing this material to people. You're taking a very short, sharp trip. I've had about a 3-4 year trip. Lisa's been on a 20-30 year trip. The short, sharp trip is a wild ride, emotionally and in every other way. Welcome and have fun with it. But the bottom line is...
The good news is, though, there's a lot of rabbit holes you won't have to go down. And there's a lot of rabbit holes that the people around you who wake up tomorrow or next week or next month won't even have to go down, because they will be irrelevant now. So the learning curve is not as great, because people who wake up from now here on in are waking up in a new paradigm. They're not waking up in the old paradigm and trying to figure out how the hell to get out of it. They just have to orientate themselves to the new one. And that's a good thing. That's good news. There's a lot that they just will not have to deal with and go through and try and get their head around. Because it will be told to them in past tense. And
I think, is that part of the tipping point that you guys have been talking about in your previous shows?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, one of the things that it appears to be in somewhere in our nearer future, and I can't be any more specific than that because I will not be putting any dates or specific timeframes out there, is when the One People's Trust commissioned the first CVACs, which is the replacement assistance organization for the people. With that comes disclosure, if it already hasn't happened. Now, by disclosure, that's the information tipping point we're talking about, where absolute truth is laid on the table for everybody to see, and that means everything that's gone on. And one of the differences between what the cabal may try and roll out in the next even few days possibly compared to full disclosure is that it won't be full disclosure. It'll be just disclosing certain things, which will be very startling and have a big impact, but not the whole truth. Exactly. You won't hear a mention of those guys. You won't hear a mention of,
you won't hear that.
Beg pardon?
I guarantee you won't hear that. I just don't see them rolling that out.
No, they will never admit to that. So, again, if we're back to that checklist of what you won't see. to make sure, you know, just to guarantee to yourself that this is not the real tipping point. The real tipping point is yet to come. Because one of the things that Heather has consistently said since the very, very first time she went public is that when this event happens, when there is absolute disclosure, it will be everything. Everything for the human race to decide its future on the table. You won't miss
absolute
that one.
Absolute data.
Now, there also has been a call out quite a bit during today's show in the chat room as well for information on the CVACs. We're not going to have time to go into them again today. So what I suggest you do if you're interested in more information on the CVACs is go back and listen to last week's show. There's also, did we do that on the collective imagination or did we do it on opt-in? We did a meditation, actually, a kind of, it was a bit of a meditation with Bob describing a visualization of what the CVACs could look like based on Chris's understanding of
them. Hey, Lisa and Scott, before I get off, can I just say one quick thing?
Sure.
I just want to say thank you guys for taking my call and thank you for putting this information out there. I know it's very overwhelming, and I didn't mean to make this a long conversation about me. I hope that there's a lot of other people out there who are feeling like I am, who really just experienced the same benefit that I did. Thank you all so much for your perspective and for what you're doing. You know, love and grace being sent in everybody's direction and everybody in the world, and just thanks. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for all
you're
this.
Welcome, Michael. You're welcome.
Back at right.
As
part of the research, I suggest you go back and listen to, if you haven't heard them already, this is our third opt-in radio show. So go back and listen to the last two. And have a look for The Collective Imagination, which is also on Blog Talk. All the shows from this year. We started it back up, I think, on the 8th of January. So that, Dee's been a part of, Bez's been popping into that show. Heather's popped into that show. We've been talking about, on The Collective Imagination show, we tend to talk more about the spiritual aspects of it, the multidimensional aspects, And the questions that arise out of the legalities that have gone on. So the opt-in show, we tend to focus on paperwork, procedure, you know, the CVACs, the courtesy notice, the nuts and bolts of it. And on the following night or the following day, we open up to the bigger questions. So we've covered a lot of this in various conversations as well. So I suggest you go back and listen to those recordings as well.
Yeah. Plus, there is a discussion which I think is on the website, which we need to keep pointing people at. Our initial discussion that we had about the structure of the CVACs between you, Bob, and I, it's a longer recording with more detail about how that structure, or how I see that structure anyway, and I think it's pretty close to the way it works.
Is that up anywhere?
Well, I've passed it to various people. I'll check this afternoon to see who's put it up, and if it's not up, I'll follow through and make sure it gets there. Because it has got more detail in it, it will be quite useful for people. And look, if there's one thing I'd like to put out there, because the next time we discuss CVACs, I want to really discuss this point. Most people recoil from the idea of, you know, these massive amounts of proposed resources becoming available to everybody freely, and they think, oh my God, everyone will party, party, party. It's a fear reaction that virtually everyone I've talked to about it has. And I know this audience is probably, there'll be some in there who have sort of had that and passed it, and some like Michael who are just coming into this and probably thinking the same thing. The CVAC funding will be available past the point of disclosure, where we've had the big wake-up call. This will shift people's thinking. That's point number one. Point number two, what I really think we should focus on is, okay, there'll be a few train wrecks. Fine, we can sort that out. What about the things we can do with those resources? And if you're in, say, a town in America somewhere and there's 30% unemployment and maybe three people sign up for the CVAC and have resources available, they could fix that in a couple of months, just by starting up public service projects, just by funding community centres or farms or buildings for the homeless. That is absolutely the things we should be thinking about. So keep that thought in mind, and we'll take it a bit further next time we talk about the CVACs. Here endeth my rant, Lisa.
Well, you know, the other thing is kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, Chris, is exactly that. It's going to be this amazing thing to see, to be able to, I'm looking forward to sitting back and watching this happen. The cabal, whichever face it wants to wear, pushes out their new shiny bow-covered sparkly system, and they're, you know, here's 2% of the truth to go with it as far as announcements. And then the CVACs get lost with absolute disclosure. And if you're sitting back and going, okay, on this hand, I'll get, you know, all my income taxes back, and I won't have to pay income tax anymore. But on this hand, I have the CVACs. On this hand over here, I get, you know, these little drips and drabs of information, which are obviously not complete. And on the other hand, I have full and complete data. Which am I going to choose?
Exactly.
Well, I know which one I'm going to choose.
Yeah, it's a
no-brainer for me.
Yeah. Now, if you're new to this and you haven't heard any references to CVACs at all, it stands for Creations Value Asset Centers, which is a bit of an esoteric term, which we'll discuss next time we go over the CVAC information. It's a new form of governance. We won't use the word government because it's not. It's one where the people are interacting with a group of public servants who are actually entirely committed and restricted to doing nothing but serving the people. No politicians, just public servants committed to serving value to the people and making sure that any part of the community that needs development for the people is organized and carried out. And that's not the sort of government that we have ever seen on this planet. Government. See, I fell into that trap again, that old trap. Old language. That's not the sort of structure we've ever seen on this planet before, and we're going to be talking about it regularly. And if there's a nice article on Wake Up World, which I think that Lisa mentioned earlier, that is Wake Up. I don't know the website's name, so I won't even attempt to try and.
It's
quote
wakeup-world.com.
.com. Okay. Good article there that actually covers the whole range of the whole sort of scope of what the People's Trust are doing, including the CVACs. Now, it's not hugely detailed, but there's enough principle there that you'll get the hang of it. It's not something that we're going to have to completely decide the structure of immediately. It's designed to be a rapidly evolvable system which the people will direct. There won't be we won't elect an authority like the governments we're used to, who will then tell us what to do. We will be able to continually direct its progress and its development in perpetuity. That means forever, folks. We like that.
Yes, we do. I've just got a couple of things to cover off. We normally do a flash mob, and honestly, we've been so busy, we haven't even come up with a particular target for a flash mob today, but one of the things I'd like to put out there is everybody who's on Facebook, if you go and change your profile picture to the IN logo, then what we'll be seeing is those little IN logos everywhere, all over Facebook. You can get it and embed it in your emails and have it as your signature on your emails with a link to the Optin website or the People's Trust 1776 website. Just get it out up there. Change your avatars on whatever forums or any groups that you're involved in. Make it the IN logo. Now the other idea that's come up today is that article that's on Facebook from that judge. Is he a judge or a lawyer?
Apparently a judge.
Apparently a judge. As we said, he didn't actually rebut anything. He just said, oh, this is rubbish, and came back with nothing of any real value.
Exactly.
Find it on – I'll try and put the link back in again so I can find it, and into the chat room, and ask him to be specific, not just general rubbish. Just hit us with why and give us real understanding about why.
Now,
prove that the government is not a corporation. Go ahead, we'll wait.
Exactly. Now, look, what I'm sitting here thinking. Well, we need to get the people's voices to bear on these, amateurish attempts at deflecting. And the best way I think of is this. Ken and Scott and I are one of the things we're doing later in the week is going to be setting up an email address people can send questions to, and also what we'll get you to do is send samples, examples of deflections like this that you're getting, but with the contact details of the people involved, the contact details you put on the original courtesy notice, for instance. So it's something where we can get to them an email or a fax or something, and that can be part of our flash mobbing. We will do some of those, and also you independently you could do them anytime you like. If they get tens of thousands of communications of people saying you better rebut this with specificity and particularity, or you are in breach of trust.
And Ron, if you feel comfortable and you want to share your details that way, we can certainly let whoever it is that's antagonizing know where we stand.
Yes, and I do have the privilege of having a wide audience of my own videos, so that if I make a video on it and post it on my Facebook and my YouTube channel and everything, it will get pretty good exposure, plus added exposure of those that aren't direct subscribers and Facebook friends.
Yeah. Now, I'd just like to say, people keep saying, what's the enforcement? At the moment, we are. And we have to get ourselves organized in the fashion we're describing here. And the sooner we do it, the better it will actually work for us. And I'd also like to say this. Michael, who just phoned in as an ex-military person, if you take a look at the filing on the People's Trust website called Military Orders, you will see that there is an opportunity for military to actually bond into the CVAC as public servants and serve in that capacity when CVACs are actually running. And I'd like to also bring that to the attention of any military people listening or ex-military listening, that when we go into that phase, that opportunity will exist for you. Okay, and then we start to, just how that will play out, we can't tell you just yet, but I want you to bear that in mind because that's written into the filings. The other thing that is written into the filings is this, that, and this is in the declaration and order, that the public trustees have actually ordered that all of the one people assist them, the trustees, and any other public servants involved in the trust in assisting on carrying out the orders to close down the old system. So if you like, you can actually take that on board. And, we've actually been officially requested to assist to shut down the old system. That is what the courtesy notice is doing.
And that's okay. Not just military. That's also police officers, any law enforcement agents.
Sheriffs,
all of them, the whole bunch.
Exactly. So we are going to be our own enforcement, and it's a matter of gathering our voices, getting organized, and if some lawyers and judges come back with the kind of ridiculous deflections we saw today on Facebook, they're going to hear the voices of the people. And that energy will send ripples up and down their system, and they will ultimately fall silent, which is what we require of them, to fall silent and stand down.
Another thing I wanted to say is I agree with Dee wholeheartedly. The time for secrecy is over. The time for transparency has arrived. So any of you who are out there and listening and you have information, come forward. This is the time for absolute disclosure, because it's going to get disclosed anyway.
Yeah.
So,
one thing to remember is disclosure is never going to come from the government. I'm sure Dee would agree with that.
Not full disclosure, nope.
Exactly. It'll be what's convenient at the time for them. And so it's going to actually come from us. So it's time now to think about how you might go about that.
Now, I just do want to briefly, because we're running out of time, I want to talk a little bit about tomorrow's show, because it's going to be big, people. A document which I'm not sure if it's gone public yet or not.
No, it hasn't publicized yet.
It hasn't. But we can talk about it. It is another one of the filings, the UCC filings by the One People's Public Trust. And what it means for us, not just 3D boots on the ground, but what it means for us spiritually, I'm still finding the words to express because words are so inadequate. Now, if, you know, we've through this chat room and in particular, but we've been asked a lot of questions about the multidimensional aspect of all of this. You know, could I explain the multidimensional aspect of the UCC? Could I explain the multidimensional aspect of the courtesy notice? And for those who didn't hear last week, on last week's Collective Imagination show, I shared a vision that I had a couple of days before that about, I called it my beast vision. If you get the chance, I would recommend you go and listen to that before tomorrow's show, because I think it will add a great deal of context for what we're going to talk about. And so if you go to Blog Talk Radio, look up the Collective Imagination and look for last week's show. I think that's where I shared it, wasn't it?
The other thing, I'm just going to jump in, is, and I still haven't had a chance to listen to the whole thing. I'm so far behind in listening to all the different videos. Is the interview that Heather did with Mel from Freedom
Yes.
Center. Okay? Even if you can only listen to the first 10 minutes of that, Heather has some very important information that she gives that is foundational to that filing, that UCC filing we're talking about tomorrow.
So there is to clarify, and there is an interview with Freedom Central, with Mel V, and it's just herself and Heather. It was only put online yesterday, or the day before, perhaps.
Yesterday.
Yep. So listen to that. Those are the two things I would really recommend you listen to before tomorrow's Collective Imagination show, because it will give a great deal of understanding and context for what's coming tomorrow.
Yeah.
It is a big one, folks. I'd have to say this. When the three of us realized what was going on, it left Lisa in tears, Bob speechless, and me blithering. It was like, da, da, da. Okay.
But you blithered so nicely, Chris.
Well, thank you, Dee. But
Lisa, go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to say, it answers some... If you have existential questions, why are we here, what are we doing here, you better listen to this show.
Hey, Lisa, just a couple quick announcements from me, because I know we're coming up on the last 13 minutes. We're looking for a few specific volunteer categories for the ground crew that we're putting together. We now have a volunteer button on the opt-in website, and we're looking for anybody that knows how to use Microsoft CRM, Customer Relationship Management. We're using the Microsoft CRM to organize all the volunteers as well as organize all the various projects that we're working on. So if you have Microsoft CRM experience, go into the opt-in, opt-in.com site, click on the volunteer button, and in the skill field, put CRM in there and send it over, because we're looking for people that know how to customize these Microsoft CRMs, a very robust tool. Also, web developers that know WordPress development. One of the things I'm working on right now that's going to go live on American Kabuki, and I know Dee's going to share it, and Kuila Pele blog is going to share it as well, as an open letter to the media, specifically radio. I just did the Morning Brew radio show last Wednesday, which is a syndicated talk radio show that's every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, that I'm going to be going on again this Wednesday with a host named Gwen Caldwell. And we covered a lot of the OPPT basics there as well. We're uploading the video to put on the blogs tonight. But we've been invited back every week. There was over a million people listening representing 10 different countries. And when I talked to Gwen after this show, she said that listening through the live stream on her blog, she saw a couple of IP addresses for a few foreclosed banks. So there's a lot of people that aren't too happy about what we're doing listening to this very call. And that goes with the territory. But what we're going to be putting out here tonight is the open letter to the media, which is going to be basically a pledge to try to get on more radio shows with some of our radio team. And anybody can download this. It's going to have links to the courtesy notice as well as links to our original press release. And so really what we want everybody to do is go download it and send it to all of your local radio stations and media outlets, online media outlets, newspapers, and blast it out there. Our biggest piece of arsenal of ammunition right now is awareness. And the more people that more people out there that we let them know about what's going on with One People's Public Trust, everybody's sharing it, and the more, the faster we'll be able to get this, spread this across the world. So go to AmericanKabuki.blogspot.com or D's blog, removingtheshackles.blogspot.ca, right, D?
Well, actually, the new site is now up. Well, removingtheshackles.net is the new site, which we are now using pretty much solely, except it just went down about a half an hour ago, and we're trying to figure out why.
Okay, perfect. So there you go. There's the site, and in the meantime, she has her blog. Also, I just got a text from Aaron, and if we want to do a flash mob to close out this call, PBS has 1.2 million likes, and you can click on the highlights. It's facebook.com/PBS. Click on the highlights field in the middle of the page below their profile picture and change it to post by others, and we can blast PBS right now. It's supposed to be by the people for the people. So what better place to go on Facebook to do a quick flash mob before we close this out?
Another thing I wanted to mention, any musicians out there who want to sing about this whole thing, you know, I love music. So get all the creative people out there who want to put together some sort of song or some sort of, or to tell us about who you be, put it out there.
Perfect.
And we can pick, as someone's been putting it in the chat room quite a bit, we can pick a OPPT related video on YouTube next week and like it, comment on it, share it, we'll pick one and everybody can just share that one video and make it go viral. You know, there's probably a couple of 100,000 people listening to this call right now, so that's a lot of likes and it gets attention.
Yeah, well, perfect. I'm sitting on the Facebook page typing in a message here in PBS. I'll see all you guys over here.
Awesome. So it's facebook.com/PBS for anybody that wants to get in on the fun.
And Bob, Seraph just sent me a message saying to tell you that he's written a song called B. So he's a step ahead of you there.
Good job. I can't wait to hear it.
Excellent. Okay, last few minutes, guys. Dee, is there anything you want to say before we close out the show?
Not really. This has been a great show tonight. All I say is to everyone, keep your eyes open, watch the media, because there's a lot of stuff coming out in the media right now. Keep your eyes peeled and, you know, keep that open mind when you hear those announcements start rolling out as to, you know, what they're not saying.
Exactly. Now, this is something they've been trying to push out since before Christmas, so if they can finally get it out this week, then good luck to them, basically. Bob?
Yes.
Any closing comments, Don?
I just wanted to thank everyone for their awareness and their being, because I have never seen anything move like this so quickly. I've never seen the willingness of people come together in such a way, and it's profound. It's awe-inspiring. All of you, you're awesome, amazing. Thank you.
Excuse me. Agreed. Chris.
Well, I want to echo what Bob says. Thank you guys for being here. You're here because you know something's wrong with the world, and you've got a gut feeling that this is the vehicle through which we, the people, can fix this place. That's actually why I'm here. And I didn't get a chance to say that to Michael before, but that is the bigger picture. And we have to stay the course. The resistance we'll get from the system to the courtesy notice is completely expected. We just stay the course, and we'll play them at this game, and at some point we'll be stepping through the doorway together.
Excuse me, I had to cough. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Precisely.
We always have been. And Ron, I know you're still there, so I want to thank you for calling in. Thank you for your input.
You're welcome, Lisa.
Keep us posted on your situation, and we can certainly come together and support you in this, sending courtesy notices to those relevant people. And
I will let you know after tomorrow night's meeting about a week from tomorrow for the show that night.
Lovely.
As we've discussed before.
Yes. Okay. That'd be lovely. All right. Thank you once again. Brian, I just wanted to make sure we covered off all the updates on the opt-in website. So at the top of the page on the right-hand side, you'll find a volunteers button that has all the fields necessary for you to fill in if you're in a position to volunteer some of your time and energy towards this cause. We have the courtesy notice is on there on the front page. We have, I believe, let me just see, resources, documents, the audio description, which, as I said, was like a two-hour discussion between Scott, Ken and Chris, fully explaining the courtesy notice. If it's not on the website yet, it will be very shortly. And was there anything else?
I think that pretty much covers it. A good call to action is for people to go download this open letter to the media. I mean, there's so many different media outlets. You know, really, my focus with our focus with the ground crew is just to utilize the resources that we have to bring exposure to this story on a global scale. And it's all, the momentum is already there. I mean, no one on this call is going to argue that the momentum isn't there. I mean, we have over 200,000 people listening to this call, and we had over a million people on Wednesday morning. We're going back every Wednesday to discuss OPPT, and that's just the start. So if you're compelled, I mean, I'll echo something Heather always says in the chat room. She says, you know, it's all done. Everything is done. Checkmate. It's over. But the people just don't know it yet. And the more volunteers and the more willingness people have to go out and share this information, and doesn't take long to do a little bit of research, figure out who your local radio stations are and local newspapers are, put all the emails into a blast and fire it out. It's already written. All the links are there. All the information is there. So the more support we have and the more people put this out there for all to see, the faster we get to where we're going to want to go. But grab your popcorn and your sodas, ladies and gentlemen, because the party is already started, and you know, it's only going to get more fun from here. Hallelujah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
once you know, it's an exciting
time.
Absolutely. what a year this is going to be. So once you know you've got your head around these courtesy notices and you understand what you're doing and you can stand in that space, you know who you are, you know who they are, start sending them out there. How many do we want? A couple hundred thousand of them in the system? You know, this is about educating each other. That's what this courtesy notice does. So the more police, the more bank employees, the more council employees, government employees that get educated on where they really stand right now, the better. The quicker, the better. And love you all. It's been an amazing couple of hours. And I look towards having you all again tomorrow on the Collective Imagination Show. It's at 12 o'clock Sydney time. It's at 8 p.m. Eastern time, I think, Bob. Is that right?
Yep.
Yep. And please tune in because, you know, we'll be discussing the latest document and what that really means. So thank you again, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night, John boy.